Welcome to The Podyssey, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the greatest little independent cinema on the planet, The Odyssey in St. Albans. This podcast is a partnership between The Odyssey Cinema and Mix 92.6 FM, Hertfordshire's local radio station. Thanks for joining us.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to yet another edition of The Podyssey. We're back at full strength this week. Welcome back, Sam.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
What have you been up to? How dare you miss a Podyssey recording? Did you have a nice time?
I had a very nice time. I was in the Peak District. It was lovely.
There you go.
Yes, out in nature.
All right, for some. Well, we held the fort while you were away, but we're delighted to have you back. Roberto, hello. How are you doing?
Hello. How's it going? Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
Nick, nice to see you.
Hello, everyone. How's it going?
Very good. Right, okay. So let's... Oh, today we're going to be talking spy thrillers, yes. And we'll come on to why. We'll also be bravely rerunning our brand new and as yet we're not sure about section on film cliches. So, chaps, what have you enjoyed over the past few weeks since we last spoke?
So I've seen a couple of movies at the Odyssey, of course. I saw the Penguin Lessons.
The Steve Coogan thing.
The Steve Coogan film, yeah.
Good.
Really heart-touching movie, but also like humble in its way of presentation. Like, I didn't expect it to be so honest in a way. Like, some parts are clearly like inspired upon a true story, but it is like...
Yeah, mad a true story.
Yeah, yeah. So the he's an English teacher who sort of travelled the world to teach students English from foreign countries. It just so happened that at the time he was in Argentina, Buenos Aires, they were going through a political upheaval, you know, fascism, rolling strife, really. But of course, it's the main story is about this penguin that he finds on a beach covered in oil, and he wants to save the penguin. I mean, it doesn't necessarily start off that way. He sort of finds it a bit of a hindrance, but then it's sort of that message of friendship, like community, and it really helps him actually like uncover his like personality to the people around him, because he's a bit like, you know, yeah, that British like depressed guy essentially. It's a really hot, touching movie, and I definitely recommend it to anyone who hasn't seen it already. It's just a really nice watch. You know, it's nothing too serious and nothing too...
I like the look of it. I saw the trailer. I really like the look of it.
No, it's worth it. I would definitely recommend it to people. And I also saw... last night I saw Twiggy. We had a Twiggy Q&A event with the director, Sadie Frost. And she's a lovely person as well. The film was pretty good. I'd learnt more about Twiggy than I ever knew. I did sort of study her when I was in my GCSE year doing design and tech. And learnt about her sort of revolutionising the modelling business and the standards of modelling back then. But it was really interesting to find out more about the icon. You know, she's won a Golden Globe, which I never knew, for a movie musical back in the 70s, directed by Ken Russell. And she's been in Broadway and many things. So I thought it was quite an interesting watch, especially for what the audience it presents to, you know, a lot of like female audience, but it actually opens up to anyone to be like, she's from a working class background as well, so it presents a lot of like facets of life that anyone can see in her and how she like inspires people, and I'm inspired enough to buy that. And then lastly, Black Bag, I saw about a week ago as well on a matinee, and this is a spy movie starring Michael Fassbender and Kate Blanchett. It was a really tight movie, probably my favourite out of the three. There was no faff in the dialogue, there's so script, and it was really like a 90-minute movie, and I didn't need any less or any more. It was perfectly circled.
I quite like a 90-minute, you know what you're getting.
And it was shot great. It was directed by Steven Soderbergh as well, and he knows his business. It actually felt semi a bit like an Oceans movie, because he did the Oceans back in the day, and it felt a lot like that, the editing and the cutting together. It very felt like a rhythmic sort of way of doing things. So I really enjoyed those movies at the Odyssey.
Nice. I saw a trailer for the Twiggy one as well, which I fancy catching. It's that really good bit where Woody Allen, like, he's trying to catch her out and she kind of turns it back on him. I thought that was really good. I won't spoil it for people, but it's worth watching.
It's worth a watch.
Yeah, it's good. Roberto, how about you?
Oh, nice. Yeah, I just want to say, I'm surprised Black Bag is so short, because I can't think of any other spy films that are like 90 minutes. Yeah. But well, I guess that's a conversation for later as well. So I also saw The Penguin Lessons. Not necessarily surprised by what it did, surprised how much I liked what it was doing. Just does what it says on the tin and does it really well. Steve Coogan's just great. And then I've seen quite a variety of films in the last few weeks. One I didn't actually watch in the cinema, but came out a few years ago, was Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, which I watched mainly because the Lilo and Stitch live action remake is coming out.
Yeah.
And that film is probably my favourite Disney film, I think I've decided. It is amazing. And I kind of wanted to see what this director kind of might have in store for the remake.
Director?
Dean Fleischer-Kamp is directing it. And he did Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, which got a lot of praise when it came out. Haven't seen it. Watched it twice in the last week and cried both times I watched it. So I'm going to have to get prepared for that Lilo and Stitch remake. Because if he brings the same heart and soul to this remake, then I actually think that could be very good. Because Marcel is just funny, very truthful in its kind of what it's about, and just a great film. One of those films you forget you're watching a film while you're watching it. So definitely check that out.
Where did you find that?
That's on Netflix at the moment. If you want to watch that.
I will.
Another tight film, like hour and 20 minutes. Perfect. Yeah. Also watched probably the most hyped up film of the year, Sinners, which we are showing. We are showing it on Thursday the 22nd of May at 7:30. And I don't want to say buy into the hype, but I will say you should definitely watch this film. I really loved it. It's doing a lot of things that I just personally really enjoyed, particularly with music. Mm. It's Ludwig Göransson and Ryan Coogler, who just seem to always make a great soundtrack. And once again, they've teamed up to pull off some pretty incredible stuff. I won't spoil what it is, but there is a scene in this film, and you will know it when you see it.
Everyone's talking about
it. Yeah. It's just the
scene.
I have
no idea what the scene is. Scene.
As a man who is way off the pace and always behind the times, I don't know what this film is or anything about it.
Go in.
How is that the case? I've never heard of this film.
Go in as blind as possible, right?
Just okay.
Go in knowing there's a slight horror vibe, and it's also got a slight Western vibe, I think. Mm. That's all you really need to know.
It stars Michael B. Jordan.
Yep.
Oh, he's excellent. Twins. He's playing two
characters. That rings a bell.
And again, not to hype it up too much, there was a point in that film where I just forgot Michael B. Jordan was playing two different characters. I just genuinely thought there were just two brothers walking and talking around. I was like, after the film finished, I was like, whoa. If I had to sum up why it was good, it's genre bending, it's really character driven, and it's just plain exciting when it gets to the more tense stuff.
Sounds like an original film.
Yeah, sounds good.
Definitely very refreshing. That's what I'll say about
and
that one.
And must be hard playing twins, right? Because I remember watching that Craze film where Tom Hardy played both of them. Seen this?
Legend.
And he does one of them really well, but then you can almost see him thinking that the other's got to be different. So the other one, he's sort of, oh, all right. It sort of does an impression of a Cockney gangster. It's like it doesn't quite work.
That's what's really impressive about Michael B. Jordan and Sinners. There's a clear difference between the two characters in the writing and in the way he plays them, but they still feel defined and not like caricatures. And you still feel like a real emotional bond between them. So, you've definitely got to go watch Sinners. Even if you watch it and you maybe don't like it as much as other people, there will be something in that film, I guarantee you, you really latch onto. So go watch it.
Interesting thing about that as well, that Sinners is the third film in the last 3 months that Warner Brothers have put out with the main character playing two characters. So they did Mickey 17 with Robert Pattinson playing two Mickeys, and then the Alto Knights with two Robert De Niros, and now Sinners with two Michael B. Jordan.
Saving money on the staff budget.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. They're saying it's a work of genius, but it's actually just so they don't have to pay more than one star.
I think the Alto Knights more so, because those characters in that film aren't even related and they're still both played by Robert De Niro.
Yeah, it's a very strange choice, that one.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, that's so odd, isn't it? I mean, that's balmy.
I haven't seen the film, it might be good, but...
No, yeah, I agree, but I can't imagine what
they're
thinking.
Initially, I thought it was twin brothers.
Same.
I thought so as well.
I thought that's the deal, but I guess not.
No. It's like, I mean, not the same, but you know how... Robert Downey Jr. is coming back into the Marvel stuff as something else.
Yeah.
Doctor Doom.
Like, fine, no one's going to die, but kind of a weird choice, right? So yeah, like in the same way that just pay someone else instead of De Niro to be the other bloke.
Get someone who's a much bigger conversation though.
Get someone who isn't Iron Man to be another one. Yeah, weird. Okay, Sam, anything you want to name check before we move on?
Yes, I also watched The Penguin Lessons. Just to give a third shout out to that. It is a really lovely film. It really was very touching. It's an interesting one because it is from the going into it, I thought it was going to be quite a strange tonal balance because, you know, on the one hand, it's about a kind of jaded teacher who befriends a penguin, and then the other half of the film is about the kind of gradual fall of a dictatorship and they're kind of making people disappear. But it really does work. I think
they somehow manage it really well.
Yeah, it's a crazy.
Steve Coogan's really found his thing. You know how he's kind of like a slightly confused bloke driving through the film. You know, like he did it in Philomena as well. You know the sort of thing I mean. It's like he's kind of. Yeah, he does whatever that is really well, I think.
It's the same writer as Philomena, which is why I think...
Oh, interesting.
There's definitely that DNA in that film. I saw a really good review that was like, it's like Philomena. This is the term the reviewer used. Instead of a quirked-up Judi Dench, it's a quirked-up penguin. Take from that where you will. That did make me chuckle a bit.
I also saw The Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, I love it.
So good. I haven't seen it for about 10 years. So I wasn't sure if I was going to love it, but I did. It was just so terrific. It
amazing. Really,
it goes so quickly. It's quite a long film. It's 2 hours 20 at least.
Yeah, but you're really in that film. Also, it has kind of so many bits to the story. I mean, in theory.
It's an epic.
Yeah.
It is, really.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the way they tell their story is, like, sectionalized to a point. Also, because you're following Andy from going into jail to then eventually leaving jail. And it's that sort of, like, that timeless thing, because you don't really know how much time passes unless it's really mentioned, because I've not seen it in a while. But it's just, I don't know, acted really well. There's also moments in there that are very specifically like iconic, like the scene where they're all sat in the yard listening to the opera.
Yeah.
It's just like very, I don't know what the right word is, but I suppose it's just like very melancholic look on that jail life, and then also focusing on Andy Dufresne and people he meets and the people around him and stuff like that. It's just, I don't know. It's a really lovely movie, but I've not seen it in a very long time either.
Yeah, I might rewatch that.
I wish I had come to watch it.
Yeah,
the bit where he kind of, the warden's looking for him and they can't find him in the cell. He throws that stone in fury, and then you see what he's done behind the front. That is, amazing. Getting chills just thinking about it. Yeah. Yeah, great stuff. Okay, nice one, chaps. So after this, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back to talk spy thrillers. Hello and welcome back to part two of the Podyssey, which we've just had to restart because I made a massive mistake. I won't bore you with what that was, but we are talking all things spy thriller because we've got Black Bag coming up at the Odyssey, starring Michael Fassbender. We've got The Amateur, which is the Remy Malek film, coming up, another spy thriller. And then we've got the next Mission Impossible. Big news, Mission Impossible 89 is coming, starring a bloke you might have heard of called Tom Cruise. So, Sam, let's start with you. Talk to me about spy thrillers. Are they good? Do we need more of them? And which are the best ones?
Well, yeah, it is a very saturated genre, I'd say. But I do love them. I love them so much. It's kind of whenever I'm like sitting at home or it's like late in the evening, I just want to put a film on. That's generally the genre I'll kind of gravitate to. It's like last night, I was just kind of kicking around wanting to watch a film. So I put on The Bourne Identity.
Oh, great film.
Great film.
I also watched that last night.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's weird.
Because we're talking about this today. I'm going to have to at least rewatch the first one because I'm going to rewatch all three. All three of them.
Same.
There's the other two, but you know.
Oh, there we go. Wow.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's a great... great film. I always remembered the second two, so the Paul Greengrass Bourne films, the Bourne Supremacy and Bourne Ultimatum, being the best. But Bourne Identity is a great film.
Yeah.
It's got a really, just a great story of him trying to rediscover his identity. He's been dumped in the ocean.
It felt really new at the time. It probably it probably wouldn't feel quite so new now. But, you know, when you first watch it, you're like, I remember, because I'm old enough to remember when it first came out and I was watching it in the cinema. And you're like, whoa, this bloke doesn't know why he can kill people. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Treadstone.
Treadstone. It's been, like, kind of copied to death, I think. And that's probably why it feels less, like you've seen all those things before, probably because it establishes so many of those tropes in the film.
Very good film.
Really good film. It's so really tightly kind of made and really well written. It's written by Tony Gilroy, who is the writer and creator of Andor, which has just come back on Disney Plus for its second season. So he's become a very big deal since then. Also, Mission Impossible Fallout is one of my all-time favourites.
So hang on, you're going to have to... Which one is Fallout?
That is number six. It's with Henry Cavill with his excellent mustache, which they CGI'd out.
Oh, yeah, that is
on Justice League.
I love that. It's like my favourite film production story.
It is the best film production story. Yes, it's, for me, just the best one. I mean, I haven't seen the eighth one yet. The last two, so the last one that came out, The Dead Reckoning and Fallout, are probably my favourite Mission Impossibles. So hopefully the eighth one will continue that trend. But Fallout is just an amazing film. It's so well put together. It's really fast. The action is unbelievable in it. There's Henry Cavill. It's just a kind of force of nature in it.
I think he's a bit like underrated, Henry Cavill. Do you know what I mean? Because I think he's always good in everything, but you don't really hear him talked about. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't care. He's multi-millionaire, living in a very nice house. But you don't really hear him name checked. But I think he's really good.
Yeah, he's got really serious charisma. And in that role especially, because he's kind of pulling off a sort of dual role, which I won't spoil too much. But yeah, he's got a lot of nuance in his performance. And he just does that thing where he like cocks his arms and he's going up to punch someone.
That arm reload is the best thing ever.
It is like, so cool.
That's baffling to me because I'm just surprised like that happened then. Like in, what was that film, 2018? I'm surprised that's never happened in an action film before. Like a guy reloading his arms.
Reloading his arms,
and it happens in Mission Impossible 6. That kitchen fight is amazing. That's great. That's probably my favorite action scene in the film, I think.
Yeah, and it's from like a base jump out of a plane, which they actually did straight into that scene.
That's right. And they
nonstop,
because they famously now anyway, they plan the stunts first, and then it's someone's job to kind of build the story. I've got to say, the Mission Impossible, I pretty much enjoy all of them. They sag in the middle a bit, so there's a lot of them where literally all I can remember from the film is Simon Pegg kind of giving him humorous advice on a laptop while he nearly gets caught.
Yeah.
But yeah, the first couple were amazing, and then they're kind of quite watchable, and they're getting good again, I think.
I think so. They're just going crazy, really. I think because Tom Cruise...
Balls to the wall, really.
Yeah.
Like, I think the fourth one was the one where it was finally like, okay, we're going ape.
Nuts.
Here.
Climbing that, and things
like that. It's the sandstorm part as well, where he's like running through the sandstorm.
I really liked Mission Impossible 2.
Oh yeah,
Mission
Impossible 2 is such a sadness in my heart for me because it's John Woo, and I want to love it so much, but I don't know what it is. There's just something about that. Maybe it's just the fact it's like in Australia.
Yeah,
I just can't get on with that film.
John Woo does that thing in every single film, as far as I'm aware, where something big happens and a dove always flies up in slow motion. Yeah. You know the thing I mean? So someone will spin around and shoot someone and then suddenly the next thing sees doves flying up and I don't really know why.
Well, yeah. I think he was hired off the back of doing Face Off, which is kind of debatably a spy film.
I've watched again recently and it's very funny.
I love it.
It's barmy. I remember at the time that was a big film that people were... Very straight face, like, Face Off, cool thriller, no problem. Mm-hmm. It's insane.
Had it on Laserdisc.
I think for me, I'd love Mission Impossible 2 if it was as crazy as Face Off, but Mission Impossible 2 just has, I don't know, there's just something going on with it that just doesn't, it doesn't have the weight, it doesn't have the John Woo, like, crunch when a guy gets shot and it's like, I don't know, that's a discussion for another day.
The bits I always like in Mission Impossible films, which I like in any film, really, even way back to Superman when I was a kid, speaking of Henry Cavill, fun enough. You know when the first bit you hear the theme tune?
Yeah.
So I always like the bit where Tom Cruise rips off a mask and he's been someone else and somebody loads up behind him. And then the first time you hear that dun, 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 dun. Always a bit like, oh, yes. Tom.
Yeah, that, so that theme is golden.
Is it in the second one where he throws his sunglasses off the cliff?
Yes.
Or whatever, and then that's
Hans Zimmer
happens.
Like shreds a guitar version of it as well.
I'm going to rewatch all of those Mission Impossible films before this one comes out. Sure.
They're so good. I think it's probably the best like long series of films that we've got that's still going.
Yeah, and they're always big, right? They don't kind of dip, or you don't sort of forget they're out. Everyone always knows when the next one's out, and everyone goes to see it. Yeah,
and the next one, we do, yeah, because he does kind of he does produce them, and he really puts everything into them, including his life. Yeah. The next one I read recently is cost over $400 million just budget on production alone. So it's probably when they crunch their numbers, it's probably the most expensive film ever made.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So. We'll see what they've God. Been cooking to make that happen.
Yeah,
very exciting. My next spy film is Official Secrets.
I remember that.
It's really, really good. Mm. It's about it's a real story of a whistleblower who was working for GCHQ.
Oh, I've seen it. Yes, yes.
In the lead up to the Iraq invasion, and she discovers this.
Keira Knightley.
Yes, Keira Knightley. She discovers. Well. Sorry?
Matt Smith.
She discovers that the US and the UK have been illegally spying on some diplomats in the UN and trying to try and pressure them into approving the invasion of Iraq. And then it kind of just dovetails from there and how the government really pressures her to be silent and to kind of stop the story from spreading. It's just a really, really great tense thriller. I always have an impulse to rewatch it because it just does it so well. It's really well done. My last one is a throwback. It's Notorious, the Hitchcock film from the 40s.
Is that actually like spies then?
It is. Oh. Yeah, it's about some U.S. agents from an undisclosed agency who are kind of trying to recruit Ingrid Bergman, who's the daughter of a German war criminal, to try and infiltrate a gang of her dad's mates who are living in Rio de Janeiro and try and stop their CD operation. It's just a terrific film in every regard, really. There's a really good love triangle in there with Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman and the man that she's kind of forced to marry. It's terrific. It's kind of classic Hitchcock. It's kind of the beginning of all of his greatest motifs and elements that he brings to all of his later films. I love it.
Good list, Sam, and a range. And also, Roberto, we'll come to you in a sec. I should point out, we are deliberately shelving Bond films from this because it's too big a conversation, right?
Yeah.
So there's a reason we haven't mentioned Bond films.
Which did make my list slightly difficult, because I think my favourite spy film is a Bond film. Which, even then, is a weird one for me, because I have thoughts on the James Bond series, which we'll, again, get into later. If you're finished, Sam.
I am, yes.
My first mention is, you can't beat the story of a government agent who loses his memory and has to try and find out what's going on while fighting off dark forces. I'm, of course, talking about Jackie Chan's Who Am I?
Yes.
It's a film that came out, weirdly enough, 4 years before The Bourne Identity, but the book came out in the 80s, so I'm pretty sure someone probably read it.
Yeah.
Now, this film, I watched this, it's directed by Jackie Chan, along with a director called Benny Chan. They're not related. One of his lesser-known efforts, there's a pretty well-known stunt in the end where he slides down a building. But I watched it, pretty low expectations, expecting a lesser Jackie affair. I don't know if it's because it is, because you were talking about how Black Bag is like very tight and there's no guff. It's just like boom, boom, boom. Mm-hmm. This film is actually weirdly quite long, but it is just all like go, go, go. And because it's Jackie Chan, the action scenes are all so inventive, so full of character. There's like a car chase where it ends with like a car like hanging off a parking lot and it's just hanging there and there's still people in. You're like, what the heck's going on? It ends with like one of just the best like pure Jackie Chan fights two guys scenes you can get.
What's it called, Roberto?
It's called Who Am I? And the great part of the film, which is indicative of its stylings, I suppose, is that he loses his memory in kind of, and this tribe takes him in, and his name is Who Am I? One word. So it's, you figure out how it's spelled. I like it. I personally think it's very funny. But yeah, no, it's just full of like energy, and I think that's what I want out of a spy film. But if I had to be honest, obviously there's similarities to the Bourne Identity there. If those it's like those two films did a handshake, and when it came away, Jackie Chan's Who Am I got all of that, like, the really inventive action set pieces and the excitement. Not that Bourne Identity isn't exciting, but it's very innovative for Jackie Chan. Mm-hmm. And then Bourne Identity got everything else, because if you watch Jackie Chan's Who Am I, the acting is atrocious. It's actually really bad. I don't know what the problem is. I think it's because there's like quite a few non-native English speakers having to speak English, and maybe there's just a lost in translation with the direction.
Is it a Chinese production or American?
I think it's a Chinese production, but it's all in English. Okay, so like even the American actors, like the way they're acting is just very like over the top, like this agent has gone into the woods, go find him. It's like very just, don't know what's going on here, but I still think it's a fun film.
Because fair play, speaking of acting, excuse me, one of the things that makes the Bourne ones so good, credit to him, is Matt Damon's acting.
Yeah, definitely.
He's really good at acting like a bloke who's good at stuff and doesn't know he's good at it.
There's
a bit where he climbs down outside a building.
Yes.
And he climbs really well, like a Special Forces type guy would. But you can tell he's really surprised to find himself climbing. Well, it's really good. It's really, really good.
Yeah. So yeah, I rewatched The Bourne Identity yesterday. And like you said, I think because obviously it's been copied so much, it's nowadays when you watch it, there's a bit of like, oh, okay, I've seen this before. But credit where credit's due, yeah, it was very like, you know, when it came on the scene, it was very like inspirational to a lot of films we have now. Mm. And I think the thing that struck me the most about it was the cinematography is really good in that film. Like, it's got that kind of early 2000s perfect mix of like, it's very gritty, but there's like lots of kind of evocative lighting, and it just kind of, it feels like a lived in world as opposed to like, nowadays sometimes everything feels a bit synthetic.
I don't know if that's just shiny.
Digital cinematography, it can go either way. It can actually be really good sometimes, or it can be very flat and lifeless. The Bourne Identity doesn't look like that. It looks very good.
And also, we're not mentioning the B word, Bond, but I feel like after the Bourne films, Bond became well Bourne.
Oh, yeah.
He was kind of big and buff and always a bit on the outside with his own people chased it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, kind of very, quite and very like efficient as a killing machine, yeah, as opposed to like, you know, more suave and slick as he used to be.
Yeah.
The soundtrack's great. John Powell, always a great, also funny enough, did the soundtrack for Face Off.
Oh, nice.
But he's always a great composer, adds a real kind of like, you know, to the soundtrack.
It all comes back to Face Off.
Yeah, it all roads lead to Face Off. Yeah, no, it is great. I do think there is a part, as a fan of action, I can't forgive what the Bourne films did in making action scenes for like quite a few years. Just like a guy whipping a camera around like the mid-torso of two people fighting and just being like, ah, yeah, that's it. Call it a day. But credit where credit is due. I am interested to see how the sequels shake up, because from what I remember, the sequels, the stories get more engaging, but the filmmaking becomes more standardized, I feel. I might be remembering that wrong. But
I think it becomes very, like you were saying, very shaky cam. I think the first one is the least
really?
Offender in that, Supremacy and Ultimatum are like all over the place.
Also, the first one, like, that's a really good story. Like, this guy doesn't know why he's like it. By the time the next one's, you know who he is and what he's all about and who the baddies are.
He still just doesn't quite know.
Yeah.
He sort of knows.
I guess the Bourne Identity is a good like thing for me in terms of talking about spy films in general, where I kind of like the style sometimes. I like the vibes that are going on. But for me, it's like there is a slight detachment from the characters a lot of the time. I kind of feel like I don't know many spy films where I feel really invested. And that kind of extends to Mission Impossible as well, because I'm going to be honest, as much as I like some of the action scenes in later films, I mean, Mission Impossible 5, I was sleeping. I know some people quite like that one.
Oh, I love that
film.
And Rogue Nation.
Mission Impossible 4, I love the first hour. And the next hour, after the Dubai stuff, I'm like, conked out again. Weirdly enough, I think my favourite is Mission Impossible 3, which doesn't have that many big stunts, but
no, not
the
really.
Script is probably the best one.
I and agree Phil- with you.
Philip Seymour Hoffman is the villain.
Oh,
amazing.
He's a great villain.
And I think I kind of like all the covert stuff. There's that scene where they infiltrate the party and he disguises himself and he's like...
Oh, I like all of that with the masks and...
I think that is my favourite one.
There's also a bit in that movie where Ethan gets pushed so hard that he nearly throws Philip Seymour Hoffman out of the plane.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he was like, tell me what's going on. Like the rabbit claw.
I remember that. Oh, yeah.
The rabbit foot thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. I like that one a lot. J.J. Abrams.
Yeah. I think that's me saying, like, I kind of would like to see more character-driven spy films, but maybe that's what Black Bag is. I haven't seen it yet, but I'll see what's going on there.
Funny enough, on the Mission Impossible, in a mad Matt Damon Bourne Mission Impossible crossover, both having got mentioned, I heard Matt Damon on a podcast, and he was talking about how he had dinner with Tom Cruise to maybe talk about, you know, maybe appearing in a Mission Impossible, whatever it was. And Matt Damon's like, you know, so when you did the big jump in the Middle East, like, how did it go? So Tom Cruise, like, so, you know, he's really intense. Like, so I went to the stunt, I went to the stunt guy, and I said, "This is what we're gonna do." And the stunt guy said, "No." So I got a new stunt guy.
That is, yeah. So the way Tom Cruise talks about like how he does his stunts it's kind of impressive because he does just sound like a bit of a mechanic, like a scientist. Mm. But then there is also a slight bit of like insanity in his eyes, and you're just like, "What?"
He loves it.
Something's gone wrong here. Mission Impossible for me is an up and down thing. I'll be interested to see what this new film's like. Last spy film I want to mention is a Stone Cold classic. It's Johnny English Reborn.
Yes.
Which is actually quite a funny film, I think. It's got the Johnny English franchise is generally not
second
known
or
as
third
it.
One.
That's the second one. Okay. That's the one with Simon Dominic West, is it? As a
I've only ever seen the first.
I'm the only one who knows the Johnny English lore. All I'll say about Johnny English Reborn is, like, as a parody of Bond films from with an actual, like, established British comedic actor, I feel like it's the best you can get. Because it's also weirdly, like, edgy. There's, like, quite a lot of deaths in that film for a film mainly marketed at children. So, yeah, I'll just quickly mention that one. Spy films are a weird one for me. Sometimes I'm like, I can dig it, but then other times I'm, like, pretty detached from it.
They can get very complex. Like, we're going to go on to Nick's in a sec. Have you watched Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy?
Yes.
I've tried to watch it.
Oh, my God. So that is all spies, right? It all happens in really dark rooms. Mm-hmm. And it's based in, like, I think the 60s or 70s. Mm-hmm. And what that means is all the men in it are white men with the same hair and the same thick-rimmed glasses. Yeah. So when two of them are chatting in a dark room, you're watching it thinking... I don't know who's even talking to who here. They all look the same and they all sound the same. It's absolutely baffling.
Yeah, isn't that one just pure, like, the bureaucracy of spy work?
I think so, yeah.
Which maybe is the point, but I don't particularly
want
to watch.
It's not as fun.
Finding a mole.
Right.
That's it,
It's very much, like, inwards looking towards, like, you know, the sternness of... I don't know. They're all very stiff, though, I guess.
But they look the same, as in... When you're trying to follow it, here comes a bloke with thick rimmed, kind of microphone glasses, and slightly grown out 70s hair.
And
a long, everyone looks. It's like, who? I don't even know who's talking. Is that Gary Oldman, maybe?
Can we have a win that one as well?
right, Nick, what you got for us?
Okay. Just a bit of context. I'm not really assuming these are like spy movies, because I believe that spies movies are very much like noir, black and white. Spy, shadows, da da da. Whereas thrillers can be sort of seen as multiple things. So I'm just going to go ahead and say that number one is Rogue One, Star Wars story.
It's a spy mission.
Infiltrating rebellion, resistance, rebel spies, stealing the plans of the Death Star.
Very good film as well, completely standalone.
Very good film, yeah.
And the Bourne link is there as well, because it's Tony Gilroy who, well, ghost directed Rogue One.
Rewrote most of the whole
thing.
That's true. I enjoyed the film a lot, especially at the time when the sequels were coming out. You know, fans of the franchise were not really finding much with that, and you could probably look back on Rogue One and think it's probably the best Star Wars film in the last 20 years.
I think most people would agree.
So that stands out. I think it's a
great film.
Secondly, I have the movie Wanted.
from 2009.
I've never seen that. No,
with James McAvoy, Angelina Jolie. I think Morgan Freeman's in that one as well, actually. Yeah, so it's a really, it's a more of a comic book movie, probably. But they are like, so James McAvoy gets recruited by like a secret society of assassins.
Of course he does.
Called the Fraternity, and they all get these like different code names and so on. But it's just like throughout, it's just really... not niche, what's the word? Like, it's quite camp, actually. Like, just curving bullets, absolutely insane idea. Never going to happen in real life. But, you know, it pushes those sort of things to be like, well, you could just have a bit of fun, you know? Wow. Also, the director, he's more of a sort of a thriller person. I'm not going to pronounce his name because I'm going to butcher it. But he did Night Watch, like the villain. Vampire movie. He also did a Day Watch as well, which was a sequel.
I always see the DVDs for those ones.
Yeah.
I don't know what they are.
It's like one of those ones. It's like, I remember seeing 40 Days and 40 Nights? Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great movie. It's really kitsch. Like, if you want to check it out, just have a fun time, you should definitely check it out. It's also got an early Chris Pratt in there as well. Oh. And it's got some really, like, good practical stunt work. Not practical, but like, I don't really want to say it out loud, but there's a bit where there's like an office fight, and then there's like a CG sort of like, almost in a comic book way, where it'd be like type font over the image to be like, this is this, or, you know, this is sort of the in theme with what's going on. So my next movie after that is Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
Oh, great. I thought about this.
I should have thought of that, yeah.
Yeah, so directed by Anthony and Joe Russo, which was one of the questions at the film quiz last week.
Oh, nice.
but, yeah, I think if anyone is used to the Captain America, especially, of course, he's more of like, he's a super soldier and he works for the government, but he, in this one, he sort of begins to feel the strain of the, you know, the environment around him, and that sort of like, he can see that things are not necessarily in the way that he wants to see it. SHIELD, the agency, is sort of coming under threat, and there's a lot of like influence via Hydra, which is like the rival agency, and so on.
It is very like, you know, that kind of bureaucratic espionage element.
Yeah, exactly.
In there.
And it's got some great, like, actually, like, one of the better storylines, like scripts,
I think so
as well, for a Marvel movie. It's like the action was shot in a way which I'd never saw a Marvel movie do it.
When he just kicks that guy over the boat, I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so brutal.
Like, it's hand to hand and everything. It seems, you know, without it being a comic book, you know, show offy.
Yeah.
It really does pack a punch in the way like it deals with things, like, because, you know, I think at the time as well, it's a current theme of now, the world. It's just like politicizing certain things that shouldn't be politicized versus, you know, like just dealing with evils of the world that might not be exactly present. It's all sort of like minutiae, you know, in a way. But it's a really good movie. Actually, I'm just realising these are probably more comic book movies than mentioning Wanted and Captain America, but I'm sticking with them.
I think that kind of is my, some way, I would like more comic booky spy movies. I think like I'd like that kind of, like, you know, adding like a Sin City vibe to it, where it's like,
well, like The Incredibles.
There's quite a spectrum. Yeah. Incredibles is such a good film.
Yeah, and that's a shout for that sort of thing as well.
I watch that a lot. yeah, good film. But there's a real spectrum, isn't there? So like, there's the one that Sam mentioned with Keira Knightley, which is very much people going through filing cabinets, taking photos on a screen quickly, being followed, real people, all the way down to like McAvoy bending bullets. Like, there is a big, and like something that I quite like, The Kingsman.
That was nearly in my list.
The first Kingsman
third
one.
Oh, the first one, because I was going to go for the third, Kingsman.
Oh, the kind of historic.
The historic one. That was pretty much wildly inaccurate. I still love the fact that they've like gone through history and tried to tie it in some sort of way. Yeah. I enjoyed the... Actually, I enjoy all three of them, to be fair.
Yeah, the first one had that slightly Bourne thing. I mean, you wouldn't think it was much like Bourne, but when you first watch it, you're like,
very fresh.
I've not really seen this done like this before. Yeah, it's good.
Colin Firth kicking ass in the first one.
Yeah.
So second on my list is a film we all know and love because we mentioned it a thousand times today. It was The Bourne Identity.
Nice.
It's just like out of all... I do not like 2 and 3.
Really?
2 and 3 are not I remember trying to watch them. I think it is almost like the shaky cam. It is so... I don't know. It just feels so like...
What are we saying about the weird one where Bourne's not in it? It's Jeremy Renner.
I haven't seen that one either.
Bourne Legacy. Yeah.
It doesn't work because they... I think it's the name. You can't have a film... No. Named after a bloke who's not
he's
in
not
it.
Even
There's
in
something
it. Yeah,
about
that
it.
That is strange.
Yeah.
No, and then there was also that Jason Bourne.
I quite like that one. And then I watched that twice in the cinema. Weirdly, the
is Matt Damon
time.
Back in that one?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
The second time I watched it, I was in the front row, and like you're just watching like this camera go, and you're just like.
It's like I don't know. I think number one is just like a stripped
it
version
just goes
as well,
yeah.
and it really goes. It doesn't really. Necessarily rely on star power.
Mm.
The first, even though Matt Damon was a sort of a star at that time,
but not like not
massive.
Not it's
massive.
Not like having Brad Pitt or Tom Cruise in there.
No,
is it?
Exactly.
Yeah, he's done like Mr. Ripley, at the time. And that's probably
yeah. And he was in Oceans at the time. But that's all I remember.
Like, and he was always kind of the side guy, which I guess is partly why they picked him because he's.
He's kind of unassuming.
When you first see him in that film, you are like, how is this guy going to like be an assassin? And then as the film goes on, he actually does look...
You're right in a way of also when you mention the fact that like a lot of it in the 2 and 3, I think, looks quite synthetic versus like the first one, I believe, anyway.
Do you think there's a danger that when they make a first film and it really works and makes loads of money, the pressure's on a bit to try and... keep the elements from it or replicate it or go, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like you almost lose the freedom a bit because everyone's like, right, that's what people like about Bourne. Now the next one's got to be kind of that, but more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's doing the same thing, but somehow making it bigger and grander. And in that process, I think you can often lose the magic of the first one.
Just moving on to my last one, just to save a bit of time, is Hannah.
Is that good?
It's
well
a great
today.
Movie.
Yeah.
So, Hannah is played by Saoirse Ronan, and her father played by Eric Bana. She's sort of like a secret. Like I don't know how do you call it. You know when someone's like activated in the world. So she's like she's been taught
agent.
Sleeper agent. That's it. Yeah. So she's been taught throughout her childhood. You know the ways of like an assassin and stealth and combat and things like this by her father, and then. Her father, I believe, goes away on a mission and he takes a bit longer to come back. So she goes out to see him or to find out what's been going on. She gets included into a bigger CIA mystical sort of operation. But then there's actually in that, there's like a sort of family aspect as well. There's like, because she finds a family when she's on the run, she finds his family like in a camper van place. And she joins them for a little bit to hide, but to also like see that there's more to life than just doing this by.
So it's got quite a bit of heart in there.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of heart in there, and also one of the best like soundtracks ever.
Yes,
done by the Chemical Brothers.
I was literally going to mention this. I can't remember the film very well, but the soundtrack is amazing.
There's one specific bit in that movie. She's running through a tunnel with like flashing lights, but the camera. Is like doing a whole complete 360 motion while there's like the Chemical Brothers rave music going on.
Yeah.
So it's fully like, it feels like a bit of a music video. Mm. And there's also some great moments in there anyway where it's like, it just like the camera never stops moving. It just keeps going through this whole combat scenario, like in a subway with someone running after one another and then just turns around and starts literally beating him up and it just doesn't stop. Rolls with the punches. It's a great movie. And also considering the director,
Joe Wright.
Yeah, before absolutely. This did Pride and Prejudice, Atonement, and then the year after this did Anna Karenina.
Yeah.
So it's such a
real holiday for him.
Yeah, exactly. And then they made I never saw the TV show. They did a TV show inspired by this. So I do think it has a cult
following
at least.
I've never seen
it.
Really
I might rewatch it, actually.
I'm going to watch it.
It's
I've
really
never
good.
Seen it.
Hanna, Hannah without the H.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you, chaps. Some good suggestions there. So basically, we're saying that Bourne is possibly the daddy. Everything comes back to Face Off, but Bourne is.
But we didn't mention Bond.
Yeah. In a future episode, we'll have a proper look at.
Because it is Bond. Kind of its own thing
as
well.
It is. And in terms of like film cliches and also just stuff to talk about, we should probably do when we've got a quiet month, we'll just do a whole one on Bond and see what happens. But very good, chaps. Right. We'll be back in a second to find out what's coming up for the Odyssey and also to talk about our next film cliche. Welcome to part three of the Podyssey, which is our slightly tentative new segment where we look at film cliches. And we couldn't remember this, but we've looked back and we try to decide if they're going to stay strong like Statham or get killed off like Sean Bean. So film cliche this time around, chaps, is The Chosen One. And what I mean by that is a film where an unsuspecting person is thrust onto a path of greatness. So, Dune, Star Wars, Harry Potter, pretty much every superhero film ever. Thoughts on these kind of films and this kind of storyline? We've seen it a lot, but they feel like they're different enough to get away with it.
Mm.
This was my thing when I was like looking. I was trying to look for films that were plainly just this person is the chosen one, usually a male character, obviously. Mm-hmm. And you know, they just go on this journey. They become the best thing ever. Everyone loves them, and then that's the end. And I was kind of like, yeah, there's definitely a bunch of those. And I was kind of looking. And I was like, actually, no, that one kind of subverts it a bit. Oh no, that one kind of like plays around with it.
Harry Potter is literally just that.
It's been a while since I rewatched Harry Potter films, but yeah, it's like very much. And I had to go on TV Tropes as well, the website, to like kind of like see, because they kind of break it down into like the subgenres, like, oh, the distinguishing mark that makes them the chosen one. Harry Potter's got that front and center, obviously. But yeah, I was kind of looking, I was like, where are the ones that like really strike me as the obvious ones that I couldn't really. Weirdly enough, so my joke was I was going to come and be like, rogue choice, Kung Fu Panda.
Bad
but
choice.
Like, actually is like one of the more standout examples, apparently, because yeah. it kept coming across on like the lists and stuff, which even then that one subverts it, because Kung Fu Panda, you know, I love Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone on the Odyssey knows I love Kung Fu Panda because I keep saying skadoosh every time we finish like a job or a shift, and people are just forgetting that it's actually from that film.
And Jack Black, that was just you. Of course. Yeah. Amazing.
But in that film, when he gets the scroll at the end, you think there's going to be like some wisdom on it, or that he's going to get like superpowers, and it's just a reflection of him.
Whoa.
Oh, that's the secret ingredient. I actually think that's a really great message. And it's kind of also from this film called The Last Dragon, which is this American martial arts film about a guy called Leroy Green, aka Bruce Leroy, which, if you don't want to watch the film already, get from that. It's the funnest film I've seen in a while, and it's from the 80s. It's just pure fun, and that's also a similar thing where it's like, oh, you need to become the master, but he already is the master, and it's actually really empowering. You're like, yeah. So that's a recommendation there. Yeah, I was just surprised how hard it was to find like just the base.
Yeah, so like the real clear ones. You've got like Spider-Man. Yeah. I think you've got like probably Luke Skywalker in Star
Definitely.
Wars. Harry Potter's a big one.
Matrix.
Matrix, definitely.
The one.
He's the one.
Disney do it a lot. Like obviously, as you know, as you all know, I watch a lot of Disney films. Moana does it.
Yes.
Yeah, if you've basically got your name as the title of the movie, you are the
That's probably what's going on.
Elsa does it in Frozen 2, interestingly. So Frozen 1, kind of things happen, but Frozen 2, there is a job that only she can sort, and she's kind of destined for it.
The saviour of Arendelle.
That's what annoys me more than just like starting with the Chosen One plot and then eventually developing it into like, oh no, but there's other things.
But when you backpedal like, someone into being
when you reveal that, like, and this is kind of an offshoot, my pet peeve is when they reveal like a character you thought was just a character who did cool things was actually from noble blood, and they were always meant to do this, and it's like, oh, that's just a bit rough.
That's the problem with the sequels of Star Wars, the sequel trilogy,
because
they retroactively make Rey, Daisy Ridley's character, the chosen one, but she clearly was not meant to be in the first film. She's kind of a random person, and then in the third one they're like, actually, she's Emperor Palpatine's granddaughter.
Yeah.
Boom.
Can I throw in a really rogue take on the Chosen One genre, which is very, very, very well disguised? Mm-hmm. Good Will Hunting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen Give Ones in
Work. Oh, it's very good.
You're talking about already.
In what way, sorry?
So basically, he wants to be normal, play baseball with the lads, have drinks, stay in Boston. He's a genius.
Yeah.
So he's been kind of, it's obviously a real life thing as opposed to, but he's been given the gift. Yeah. He doesn't want it. And he has to learn from Robin Williams.
Yeah, he's got a mentor.
How to manage it. And so I think, weirdly, it's a bit Karate Kid for the mind.
That is like a fantastic observation, actually. I've never, like, I only know the, I haven't seen it, but I just know the plot of Good Will Hunting. And like that.
It's kind of Karate Kid with cleverness instead of karate, a little bit. That's not really true, but you know what I mean.
There's this theory, I don't know if you've heard of it, called The Hero with a Thousand Faces by this guy called Joseph Campbell. He wrote a book about it in like the 40s, where he says that pretty much every story in one way or another is that plot. It so kind of is this trope of like someone who's just kind of at home and they're doing their thing and then they stumble across something, they find a mentor who wants to show them the way and then they go on a great adventure and then they come back home having learnt what they've done and they've got to embrace their destiny and go forth with their new knowledge. And that kind of when you think about it, you can sort of see that in every single film in one way or another. But I think now, because we've had like Harry Potter and Star Wars and The Matrix and all these things, I think maybe we are maybe saturated with that concept at its like base level.
Yeah,
and we
might have to
like,
pause it a little bit just because everyone's like, oh, here we go.
We just need like a Good Will Hunting or things more like that where they're taking it in a different direction. So it's not, you don't see it, even though it is there. It's like, only now we've kind of realised that, that is actually how that film works as well.
It's interesting with The Matrix where, because in the first film it's kind of borderline very much that trope, but there's like a couple hints. It's not quite, the one isn't quite what it seems, and then the sequels really hammer into like, oh, there's been multiple ones and actually you're actually serving the AI by being the one. I think it's a trope you can play around with, and I like it when it does that. If I had to talk about like I don't want any more Chosen One stories just based like that, is it? Like I agree. I like stories, particularly as a fan of action films. And having seen a lot of martial arts films, some of the best aren't about like this guy is the best martial artist. It's like this martial artist is in this situation. How can he get out of
survive?
It? With his own qualities as opposed to ones bestowed on him through various means. I would say as it is, the Chosen One, just base, kill off like Sean Bean.
I would completely
I was
gonna say that like initially already, kill it off like Sean Bean.
Yeah.
There's too much going on with and I enjoy movies that don't just figurehead on one person to be like the saviour. Or something. I don't know. It's always a group effort. In real life, you know, not everyone is like one relying on that one person. It's always something.
Collective
one person effort. Collectively, or one person can provide. I don't know, like a certain thing. I have a car. You know that counts as something. You know that counts as a general help.
Yeah.
So I think the saviour thing is a bit of a old motif.
All right. It's been done too many times. We'll kill it off like Sean Bean. But also some good films done with it. And of course, without that trope, Daniel San wouldn't have killed off all of Cobra Kai so easily in the All Valley tournament back in Karate Kid days.
I do just have to bring out one more film before we finish this, which is Kung Pao.
Mm.
Have you seen Kung Pao?
No.
Have
you heard of it?
Right. All I'll say is I was looking at TV tropes and Kung Pao came up. It's a comedy film. And please do. It's on Disney Plus. No, it got removed. No, I think it might be still. Go find Kung Pao wherever it is. The reason he is the chosen, it was like the character of Kung Pao, the main character of Kung Pao is called the Chosen One. This is because he has a sentient talking tongue. And I think that's all you really need to know about what Kung Pao is like as a film. So go watch that film, please.
That sounds great.
Nice. Okay, so as a trope, we'll kill it off like Sean Bean. It will not stay strong like Statham. Right, chaps, we are nearly at the end of another Podyssey. So, it just remains to find out anything you're looking forward to in the coming weeks. Roberto, we'll start with you. Anything coming up that you're keen on?
So I'll just shout out Sinners one more time, Thursday the 22nd at 7:30. And I think I'll just generally as well shout out a little promotion we are kind of doing at the moment called Mad May. Mm-hmm. You can actually go to the Odyssey Instagram and find a little video me and Sam and a couple of our colleagues put together to promote some of the films we got on.
I've not seen this and I'm genuinely excited.
I'd love
to
show you this afterwards.
Incredible. Featuring Roberto doing an amazing Jason Statham impression. If you weren't impressed with it enough the last time.
I would say abominable, but the ball cap helps. That's all I'll say.
The ball cap helps. If that's not incentive enough to watch it.
But yes, some of the films we've got as part of this Mad May kind of, we have Black Bag, which we are showing quite a few times, Thursday the 15th at 7:30. We've got The Amateur, Saturday the 17th at 7 p.m. And then also we've got a classic Top Gun, Monday the 26th at 6:30 as well. So if you
which is Bank Holiday Monday, so no excuses.
Oh yeah, no excuses. So yeah, if you're looking for some action, looking for some suspense, some excitement, come and check out some of our films in that kind of little block. Yeah, on.
Good stuff. Nick, what are you looking forward to?
I'm quite looking forward to, I mean, I have seen it, but I would watch it over again, Warfare. So we only have that on once, but it is a really, really good movie, and it just manages to really sell the sort of boringness, but also dramatic side of the Iraq War. And I know that's probably a really insensitive thing to say, but it just manages to, like, all the actors do really well, the writing's really done well as well, and it's a great movie. It's only, again, another 90-minute movie. You can't go wrong with those ones. They come and check that out on, where am I looking? Friday the 16th at 7:30, so that'll be next week. Come check that out. And I'm also looking forward to, we've only got this one once as well, the pronunciation is Partenope.
Yes.
Which is a sort of Italian romantic drama film, but it's starring Gary Oldman, which I've seen the trailer a few times, and I'm a bit like, why is he there? But Tuesday the 27th at 7:30, if you like your foreign films, we've got that. And I believe that's really all I'm looking forward to this month, yeah.
Nice. Sam, any for you?
Great. Yeah, I'd also definitely recommend come and see Warfare. That is a really terrific, very suspenseful film that you kind of have to see in the cinema. It's very, very loud, very dramatic.
Yeah.
And yeah, definitely needs the big screen treatment.
Mm-hmm. What day is that one, Tommy?
That's Friday the 16th.
Okay.
We've also got Mr. Burton, the new film starring Toby Jones as mm-hmm. the teacher that inspired Richard Burton to become a great actor.
The Richard Burton origin story.
The Richard Burton origin story.
Also a chosen one story.
Absolutely, yeah. Also a chosen one story. Yeah. Yes, by all accounts, it's meant to be a really lovely film with some really great performances and a lot of very well done Welsh accents. I don't think
and
there's
Toby
many.
Toby Jones is great.
He's always
such
great.
A good actor.
Fantastic. Yeah, good very, actor. Very reliable. Also, at the end of the month and going into May, we've got Thunderbolts, the new Marvel film, which is meant to be terrific. I think you saw it the other day, didn't
loved
you?
It.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. So I'll definitely be there for that, and you should come too.
I just want to quickly shout out as well, because my favourite movie of all time, it might be too late to mention it now, but Cinema Paradiso, we have got coming out in June.
We've got
two
well.
Showings in June, to be fair.
June 2nd, I believe.
Yeah, and I think they can be booked now. It's an evening performance as well. Check it out. You have to. It's my favourite, please.
I think I'm coming Sunday to watch it, finally.
Good.
So,
have you not seen it before?
Yeah, no.
I'm still thinking about coming, good. Just because I've seen it about 10,000
times. Oh, who gets to project it then? Who gets to have the busman's holiday of projecting the film about the projectionist?
Oh, okay. Mm. You better do it right, you better.
So, yeah, some good stuff coming up. In terms of what I'm looking forward to, Top Gun out of those. I love Top Gun so much. I'm also looking forward, we have a little pod crew night out tonight, don't we? We're going to have a few drinks and watch the Jason Statham film, which is called
A Working Man.
I keep getting confused with The Amateur, but it's called A Working Man.
I really want to call it A Grafter.
I don't know. I'm sure they thought about that.
They probably did.
Yeah. So yeah, very exciting. Big night out tonight. So chaps, thank you so much. Another good episode comes to an end. I think because you got to mention earlier when we're talking Shawshank, I think we've got to leave this in the style of Morgan Freeman, going from left to right. Nick, I think I'm going to ask you to go first. Please say goodbye in the style of Morgan Freeman.
Goodbye, everyone.
Short and sweet, I think that works.
Yeah. I tried to do the God thing from Bruce and Mike.
Roberto. Oh.
Listen here.
It started well. I was excited for that.
Kung Fu Panda. The greatest film I've ever seen. Goodbye.
Sam?
or okay, get busy living or get busy dying.
Very nice. My friend Andy Dufresne says you should listen to the pubs. Right, some very questionable voices there. Thank you so much, listeners. Say goodbye, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you want to drop us a line here at the Podyssey, you can email me at neil.roger@mix926.com with your thoughts on the show, your views on the films we've talked about, and if you're feeling brave, you could do our next intro or set our next final challenge. You can find out all about what's on at the Odyssey or what's going on with Mix 92.6 FM by checking out the websites and searching them on all the socials, where they can both be found.